Louise McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.
Now, though, foster carers are invisible heroes in towns and villages across Ireland. They improve the lives and care for thousands of children in Ireland who are within the care system. And I think most of us are familiar with the concept of fostering, but a lot of us don't know how it actually works, what you need to do to qualify, how you could actually get the process started if it was something that you wanted to do, and what it's actually like. So this morning, we are fortunate enough to be joined by Jarlath McKee, who is a senior social worker involved in fostering in Dublin, and Sarah, who is foster mother for 3 years to Sam. And just FYI, Sarah and Sam are not the real names, but in order to protect Sam's privacy, we won't be using real names today. So good morning and welcome. Jarlath, I think I'll start with you with the basics, if that's okay. What are the situations that lead to children needing to be in foster care?
There's a wide range. So obviously issues of mental health, drug use, alcohol, neglect, and abuse. So they're very wide ranging, and they're different and unique for each child.
And so, you know, I suppose that would be something that might frighten some people. They would be worried that a child might be traumatized coming into their care, and that might be something that they're not able to manage. What would you say to someone about that?
Well, we would provide a huge range of supports. We have each child has their own social worker. Each foster parent also has their social worker, which is, their responsibility is to look after the foster parent's interests. And then if needed, we would bring in more specialist help, various forms of therapy, psychology, art therapy, and so on. So there's a very wide range of supports that we can provide, and also practical supports. So obviously, if you are taking more than one child, which can happen where you decide you're going to take two children from the one family, we could say, well, look, we'll put in some practical support, some staff, social care staff, for example, who might assist with activities for children. Let's say we're coming up to the midterm break, and we might put in supports and activities for children during the midterm break, for example.
So it's not like you are, you know, children are placed in your home and then that's it. You never hear from anybody again.
Oh, God, no, absolutely not. Sarah can testify to that. There are lots of supports. Your social worker would be in very regular contact with you. The child's social worker would see the child on a regular basis, would be listening to the child, because it's very important that we hear the voice of the child and we understand. Now, obviously, that's done on the basis of the age of the child, and they're communicated with in an age-appropriate way.
So I said earlier in the show that 92% of children who are in the care of the state at the moment are in home placements, whether it's extended family or foster care. But that other 8%, I suppose that's where you need an increase in people willing to get involved in the system, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. We would love, I personally, I've worked in TUSLA, the Child and Family Agency, for many, many years. And my deep desire is that we would have every child have a family. Now, obviously, there are lots of older children, and we find it much more difficult to find families for older children. And that would be one of the areas where we're really pushing hard to try and improve things.
And what do you think that comes down to?
Well, poor old teenagers get a bit of a bad rap in
they
my
do.
view. I love teenagers. I've worked with them for many, many years. They're good fun. They give you plenty of lip. They'll answer you back. But you'll have good fun with them. I'd love more people to come forward to foster teenagers. Now, I don't want to kind of give a false impression. Some teenagers come with lots of issues and lots of difficulties. They mightn't be in care otherwise, but many teenagers just are crying out for family and for love.
Yeah, we actually had a young person who had grown up in care on the program earlier this year. I was going to say, was it last year? But it wasn't, because the show didn't exist last year. And that really came through, that, you know, this kind of picture, I think, that's painted of particularly teenagers who have maybe had a traumatic background, that, you know, they're damaged or like beyond repair, is just completely inaccurate.
Yes, totally, totally. It's so important to appreciate that every young person's experience is unique to them, and most of them are, as I say, just crying out for love and care, and the security that many of your listeners could provide. And I'd love to see us make really great inroads into that 8%. We used to have a long and very troubled history of institutional care, and I started my career at the very tail end of that. And believe it or not, we were still placing many, many children in residential care. Thankfully, we don't do that anymore, but I'd love to see us push on, because we all live in families, and they come in many, many shapes and sizes. And that's the life that most of us will want, and not to live in institutions.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I was raised by my aunt and uncle because I had addiction in my family and mental illness. So I know well how easily it can happen. And, you know, it absolutely kills me that sometimes young people are written off just because, you know, they haven't been fortunate enough to have, an absolutely flawless start in life. Can I just ask, where are the 8% of those children now? Where are they?
They would be in a range of residential centres, and I suppose it's important to say those centres nowadays are not like the institutions of old. We're talking about small family-type settings in the community. So you could well be living in a neighbourhood where there is a residential centre for children. There could be no more than 2, 3, perhaps 4 children in that centre. And they would be all over the country.
Yeah.
Obviously, the bigger urban centres would have more.
Yeah, so it's not what it was, but it's not a family either. So,
no, it isn't family. And I mean, that's no criticism of those services.
No, not at all.
They do their very best. But it is not family, and family is what all of us aspire to live in, whatever shape or size that is.
Absolutely. Well, Sarah, I suppose I'll bring you in now, because people will be wondering what it's like to do this. So maybe you can tell me a little bit about how you came to have Sam join your house.
Sure. Firstly, thank you for having me on. I suppose our journey kind of goes back a good many years ago. My husband and I got married in our early 30s. We decided we wanted to start a family, and very quickly realised that that wasn't going to be possible for us. So we went on a 14-year journey of IVF and investigations and surgical investigations and 6 miscarriages. And my body just wasn't able to carry a child. And when I did, when it was struggling to get pregnant, and when I did, with the interventions of medical science, it wasn't taking. So we thought, okay, what are we going to do now? And we really wanted to be parents. My mum had difficulty conceiving. She had 2 stillbirths and 2 miscarriages before I was born. And I wondered, would I have difficulties as well? So obviously I did. So we looked at adoption. And at the time, and I can't speak for adoption now, and again, I'm very mindful this is my experience, so I'm not saying this is the
universal
reality. Exactly. So we looked at domestic adoption. There was very few. I now realise, because a lot of those children are actually in long-term foster care. So we looked at inter-country adoption, and that was just, it was really difficult in the sense, you would have to go through a process here in Ireland, and that could take years. I'm talking about 5, 6 years, maybe more.
And you'd already been through 14 years of...
Exactly, yeah. So we went to a meeting for inter-country adoption, and we actually met at the break. We were actually talking to a social worker, and they said, would you consider fostering and long-term fostering? So that's what we did. So we contacted TUSLA, and ironically enough, the process it for us took from the time we said we were interested in fostering to the time that we got approval by the committee. That took 9 months.
Oh.
So I was like, okay. So it was a different
type of
language.
It was your fostering gestation period.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And it really was, because throughout that process, you know, you're given a link worker. Initially they assess you, mm-hmm. ask lots of questions. And I know some people would say, gosh, you know, do they ask you very personal questions? I couldn't be dealing with that now. And you kind of think, well, if you think about the greater good and why they're asking you the questions they're asking you, you'll understand why. Because for a child to not be with their parents, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Irrespective of the circumstances. So they have to do it right, mm-hmm. you know, so it has to be better than where they're coming from.
Mm.
Otherwise, why would you have that separation?
Yeah.
So we there was lots of, you know, assessments. The social worker come to our house, ask us questions, very much around, well, for us, because we didn't have our own children, it was, you know, what do you think you would be like as parents? You know, what, looking at our values, you know, what we think it would be mean to be a good parent. And then we had a foundation and fostering course as well, which was absolutely fabulous.
So you're really, like, by the time you get approval, you're really prepared.
Yes, in as so far as you can. I mean,
yes,
that's what you still
obviously,
don't know.
Yeah. Nobody can prepare you for becoming a parent.
Exactly.
That is for sure.
And this is the thing. I mean, that was the reality. We became parents overnight. You know, so it was an interesting process, but it was very supportive. And I suppose there was a lot of reflection involved as well. So we'd go to the course, we'd come back, we'd reflect on it, and then meeting with that social worker throughout. Sometimes she'd meet with me alone, sometimes with my husband alone, then together.
Mm.
And then reports written at the end, and you go to committee.
And so then when Sam came to you, how old was he?
He was 17 months.
Okay. And what was that like?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my goodness, this has actually happened. It's a strange one, because...
Yeah.
And I get emotional thinking about this, because it's something we think about an awful lot. Like, and he's actually with us 5 years, and his parents are good parents, you know. Mm. And this is the thing as well. There's possibly birth parents out there listening to this,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it was really difficult for them, you know. And we're very conscious that for us to have joy, finally become parents in whatever shape, and as Jarrett was saying, families come in different shapes and sizes.
Absolutely.
It was somebody else's tragedy.
Yeah.
So we're navigating that all the time, you know. So I'm very grateful, but very mindful.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That makes total sense. It makes total sense. And to be considerate of Sam as well, and, you know, his own feelings, I'm sure. Excuse me about the situation. Can I just ask, because we are so tight in time, and I know that there will be people, I feel like I hear this a lot when the conversation of fostering comes up, you know, this, I could never give them back, or, you know, there's this concept that, like, you know, a child will come and be with you and then they'll be gone. But that's not necessarily the situation, is it?
No, it isn't. I suppose I should say, when we were doing the assessment, we had said we would like a child long term. And probably, you know, a baby as well, just given that we would be first-time parents.
Yeah.
So that was accommodated. Now, like, there's no guarantees.
Yeah.
And the aim at the end of the day is always permanence for the child. So, but it's always about the best interest in the of the child and what's right for them.
Mm.
So whether that's staying within the family that they're now in, or going back to their parents, then... that will be accommodated in terms of, but it's always about the best interest of the child.
Yeah, but you can say what you're hoping for, and that will be taken into account.
Oh God, absolutely.
I think it's important to kind of get that across.
Absolutely.
We're shockingly tight on time, but I have to ask you, before I let you go, what would you say to someone who's considering fostering?
Do it. Please do it. There's so many amazing foster parents, foster carers out there, and we need more. As Jarlett said, and we've had these conversations before, where is the 8%?
Mm.
And it's, again, as he said, it's no disrespect to the service that's already there, but absolutely, we need more great foster parents. And like the support is there by TUSLA. Mm. They've been absolutely fantastic. I couldn't fault them in terms of the support. The decisions you make, they're not on your own. They will take your views into account, but it's a team work, and it's always about the best interests of the child. Always.
Okay. There's so much more that we could have talked about. I think it's important to say that a lot of the preconceptions that people have about fostering in terms of what kind of person that you need to be are not necessarily the case. You can be part of the LGBTQ plus community. You can be single. You can be lots of different things. So if people are having an inkling in the back of their head, Jarlath, that maybe possibly this might be something that they want to do, where should they go to find out more information?
Yeah, if they go on our website, so that's fostering.ie, they can also ring our national inquiry line, which is 1-800 number 226771. But the best thing is to go on fostering.ie.
Okay.
That's TUSLA's website.
Okay.
And there are lots of videos of young people who've grown up foster care, and also of the experience of foster parents.
And sure, look, there's no harm in looking into it, isn't there? Thank you so much, Jarlath McKee and Sarah. Thank you so much for being with me and sharing your experiences.
Louise McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.